This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, where we finally have a little cool weather to remind us that it's almost Thanksgiving. Is my guest on? Well, great. I have a fantastic guest today, all the way from England and further along too. And he will tell us all about his wonderful new book, a very exciting thriller called Made to Kill. It's Adam Christopher. Adam, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Oh, great. Oh, I so wanted to hear your voice.
How are you doing?
Well, of course, I know that you're a Kiwi.
That's true, yes.
But you live in England now.
Yes.
I need to hear that voice. I love the New Zealand accent.
Oh, it's kind of got a bit mangled. I've lived in the UK for 9 years.
Oh.
So I'm somewhere in the middle, I think.
I can hear that already. Oh, my goodness, you shouldn't do that. Well, New Zealanders are so good at picking up accents. That's why so many of you can play, are actors and can play Americans.
This is true, yeah. I think, yeah, this is actually true. The New Zealand accent, I think, is very neutral in a way. So we move around the world and we end up talking like, you know, everybody else.
Exactly. It's funny. I lived in England for many years. I am in a little village outside of called Sonning, outside of near Henley-on-Thames.
And
so I'm American. Of course, I'm from northern Michigan. But I after living there for quite a few years, I picked up a British accent, and when I came back, everybody said, "Oh, where are you from? Where are you?" But I had a business in England, and I always hired girls from New Zealand. One, because I love their accents, and two, because they were good workers.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah.
So, I don't know where to start with you. I will start. Well, there's so many things I want to ask you. Now, Made to Kill, let's talk first about Made to Kill, and then there's many other things I want to talk to you about.
Yeah,
sure. I actually read Made to Kill because of the cover. I love the cover.
Okay.
When I first saw the cover, I said, oh, I have to read that book. I love science fiction. Of course, having lived in England for a long time, I watched Doctor Who, and I was into all of that. But then when I saw this cover, I just had to read the story. Now, I understand they've given you a new genre. You know, it's nice. You know, you're not a romance author. You're not a mystery writer. You are a speculative noir. Is that what they're calling you now?
Yeah. I think the great thing about this book is that it kind of mixes things like mystery, detective fiction, and science fiction and noir. So I kind of call it robot noir, which is my thing. But yeah, speculative fiction, I guess I consider myself a science fiction writer, but I think everything that I've done, I've sort of mixed things around, which is just the fun of it, I think.
Well, the book is fun. They always describe you as a writer of comedy, and it's true. It's very funny. I mean, parts of are hilarious. Tell my listeners a little bit about Raymond Electromatic. I don't know. This is a detective and the story. And tell us a little bit about the whole story. How did you come out with it? And tell us about the story.
Right. Well, the origin of the story is that Raymond Chandler, the sort of famous detective writer from the 30s, 40s, 50s, he wrote to his agent in 1953 complaining about science fiction, saying, can you believe this stuff? People get paid for this. It's absolute rubbish. And he wrote a little sort of 100-word, just a joke, really. But this little micro story is actually, it's interesting because it's Raymond Chandler. And even when he was just dashing off this angry letter, his voice came through. And that was my inspiration, because I thought, what would have happened, or what would it have been like if Raymond Chandler actually had written a science fiction novel? So that was the challenge I gave myself. What I was going to write the novel that he may have or would have written. So Raymond Chandler with robots is the kind of theme I was going for. So Made to Kill is a mystery science fiction novel about a robot called Ray, who is the last robot in the world. Now, he finds himself working in 1960s Hollywood as a private detective. So obviously this is like a, you know, this is a version of the 1960s that we don't really remember. It's slightly different. The thing is, he's not actually a private detective, although he kind of started out that way. He's using that as a cover for his real job, which is as a robot hitman. So he has a computer called Ada, who in sort of state-of-the-art 1960s technology is a computer the size of a building. And she gets the jobs and sends him off to do the deed. And he has a restriction in that, again, he's, you know, this is the latest technology of 1965. He has a magnetic memory tape inside him, which is great, except it only stores 24 hours worth of data because, you know, miniaturization in the 1960s. So he's kind of got this perfect alibi, whereas he'll go and do the assassinations and then he doesn't remember a thing about it because the tape is replaced every day. And then when he wakes up, it's a kind of new thing, a new job.
Well, you captured really that whole era. It was it's beautiful how you brought in the whole computer side.
Oh, okay.
And yet, you know, it seems very timely. You actually feel like you're in the place. I thought it was great.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you know, Chandler himself in his novels used Hollywood as his location. As I was writing it, it was a combination of two things. One thing was really trying to capture his voice. I mean, not copying Chandler because, you know, that's impossible. Yeah. But getting into that kind of mode of storytelling and that kind of that style of hard-boiled. In a way, it's kind of ridiculous, the similes and the kind of the humor that creeps in there. But the other thing was also the location. So, you know, using the locations that he used in his novels. Really, this is a book that he would maybe recognize as a kind of science fiction story, especially, you know, set in the 1960s. So, you know, Chandler died in the late 50s. So this is kind of his vision of the near future.
Well, it's a great homage to him. Now, I like the character of Ada. She has a lot to say.
Yeah. So there's Ray and Ada. So Ray, he's a robot, but he has his personality is based on his creator, Professor Thornton, who is kind of mentioned now and again. So Ray has this template, and part of that template are echoes of his creator's own life and experiences, and Ada, the computer, has a personality of her own.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's not really kind of directly mentioned, but if Ray has a template, then perhaps Ada had a template as well. So she's very kind of wisecracking, sassy. She's the boss, absolutely. And I like the way that when Ray kind of talks to her in the office, he has these visions that may be these sort of echoes of memory from his creator of the woman that Ada originally was, or the woman that Ada is based on. But the two of them together, I think, you know, he's very straight and deadpan, and she's kind of, she puts him in his place and basically tells him what to do. They're a great combo. They're like, having scenes with them together talking is really, it was enjoyable to write.
Well, and having the Hollywood setting, of course, was great for you. There's so much to draw upon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's such a, especially, you know, that period of the 1960s. So, you know, it's a slightly different version of Hollywood. It's one where the studio system, where the studios and producers controlled everything, is still sort of in place. That actually went away a little bit earlier in our real world. But yeah, locations, you know, these are famous places that even from the 60s to today, people recognize the names and the places. You know, the Hollywood sign plays a big role. There's the Chinese theater. Even places like the hotel that's in the book, where Ray goes to in his investigations, that's based on a real location. And again, it's one that Chandler himself used in his books.
And then mixed in all with it are the Russians.
Yeah, well, what better Cold War conspiracy, slightly science fiction enemy could there be when Ray discovers... So, you know, he gets a job... a movie star comes into his office and gives him a job to kill another movie star, which is all very suspicious because this is not normally how they get their work.
well, we hope Ray, not.
No. Ray investigates. He wants to find out why... You know, he'll take the contract, but he wants to know why one movie star wants to take out another. And he kind of uncovers this big secret conspiracy that's happening in Hollywood that involves, you know, all of the jet set and the elite of Hollywood. So the movie stars and things. So he has a lot of fun, He finds himself in this kind of glitz and glamour and rubbing shoulders as movie stars. And, you know, and movie stars, he's the only robot in the world, but there were robots before, sort of 5-10 years ago. So people do remember robots. And I think the reactions that the people have to him are quite interesting.
So, you did a lot of research of that time period in Hollywood?
Yeah, I did. So location research, I went out and scouted around. And also there's a load of, it's Hollywood, so there's a load of references available online. Amazingly, there's even things like, people took home movies just driving down the street in the 1960s, because I guess it's like these are home movies, this is famous Hollywood, Sunset Boulevard and all these locations. It's all available online, so I kind of spent hours watching the setting, which is kind of weird in a way, but really cool.
Well, this is program as for writers and those who dream of writing. So when I always like to find out how a writer works. Well, are you first? Did you do your research? How do you do your research? Do you put it? Are you well organized? Do you put it on the computer? Do you have timelines? That kind of thing.
Well, it always starts with the idea. And then the research kind of comes in bits and pieces as I need stuff. My first job is to tell the story to myself, from A to B to C to the end, and make sure that's all in place. And then I can go back and start layering in the detail and the sort of research things. So I outlined Made to Kill. My outlines are more like a kind of Excel spreadsheet, which just lists out the chapters, lists out the things that I know have to happen in the book. And maybe I'll have ideas for key scenes or chapters or events. I can put all those in. And then I kind of just fill in the gaps in my spreadsheet. And then I start writing the story. And the characters come to life. And they start to do their own thing. I think a lot of writers will say this. They start to do their own thing as you write. And then from that, I can go back to my outline and then kind of adjust it to make sure I'm sort of on the right track.
What computer program do you use? Do you write in?
So I write in Scrivener.
Oh, good.
That's for the first draft, and mainly because I find it has these statistical tools about word counts, and you can put in deadlines and dates and things. Because I have a lot of projects on sort of at the same time, I find that really useful to have all my dates and deadlines in there. When I finish the first draft, I then export that to a Word document, and then I edit in Word because it's just a little bit easier, I think, for the editing process. My first draft is usually very rough. It'll be the right word count, and it'll have the right story, but it needs a lot of sort of work. So I find Word is easier for that.
Well, you had written books before this. You won the Sir Julius Vogel Award, right?
Yes, that's
and,
right.
you've had quite a few other honors. So I don't think you had a problem selling this book.
No. Well, it's funny because I'd written a space opera. The space opera series, it's three books. The third one hasn't come out yet, but my US publisher is Tor, and they bought these space opera books. And the idea for this sort of robot detective assassin thing came up just on the back of an interview that I did where I was talking about Raymond Chandler, and my editor said, oh, you should write that. That sounds really interesting. So he's probably joking, but I took him up on the challenge, and I sent him this novelette, which is a sort of, novelette is like a short novella, like a long short story. It's kind of a weird in-between length. That is called Brisk Money, and Tor.com published it free online, and that's sort of the origin story for Ray. And it was on the back of that that I thought, oh, actually, I've got this whole world here and these characters. So, you know, I've got an idea for a book, and then it became two books, and then it became three. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, people, it's of all the books I've done, there's something about Made to Kill that I really like, and it's a world I really enjoy working in.
Well, you know, it's always wonderful when you, I think when you know in advance that you're going to be working on a trilogy. In this case, at least you're doing a trilogy with
yes.
Ray.
So, yeah.
So that's great because it leaves you open for a lot of things that you can sort of hint at for the future.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the three books, they'll be more or less independent sort of mystery / assassination. I mean, he's not a detective. He's a hitman. So not really
yeah.
mystery. But there'll be like an overall sort of story arc about Ray and Ada. And you see it a bit in the first book. Definitely it picks up. You know, there's someone on the trail of Ray and Ada because what they're doing, you know, he's supposed to be a detective and he's not anymore. So that has not gone unnoticed.
Well, one of the things I like about your book, I love your little observations. One of them that I found very amusing was the dress stores with... tell us about the dress stores.
Oh, is it with they all end in the letter I?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, now, my name,
what?
Of course, is Patzi.
Wow,
and so I was thinking, oh, boy, after I read that, I better open a dress store.
This is the thing. It's like these home movies of Hollywood in the 60s. I was watching one of them, and, you know, the guy was filming all the neon signs because that was very kind of exciting. And he was driving down, I don't know which street it was, they were all dress stores and steakhouses, like alternating on down the street. And all the dress stores were like Betty's, Patty's, Patsy's, Susie's, Lucy's, but all ending in an I. It's just things like that that you pick up. This is the kind of the research where the research just happens.
I'm wondering if girls whose name ends in I, if when we write our names they end in I, it must mean we're very egotistical or something. there might be a story behind that. I can't figure it out. You know, it could be. You know, now I don't think I had thought about opening a shoe store, but not a dress store. Although it's funny, one of the things that I read about you, well, you know, one of the things I read a lot, I've read some reviews, and the one word that people use over and over is weird. I have to find out about that, but I need to take a commercial break. So when I come back, I want to ask you about weird and also about elementary. Okay?
Cool.
So just hold on and we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Lightning fans, there's no better time to reserve your 2015-16 season tickets than now. Season ticket members get the best seats, the best discounts, playoff priority, exclusive player access, and more. Reserve your 2015-16 season tickets by calling 813-301-6600 or visit TampaBayLightning.com. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tan Talk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wickiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wickiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer Bay. Wickiwatchee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwatchee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwatchee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Adam Christopher, whose book, Made to Kill, is a real thriller. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
Okay, I want to ask you why people say, in some of the reviews, I don't know why, they say, you're weird, because you look perfectly delightful to me.
Oh, thank you. I've never actually thought of myself as a weird fiction writer. I think weird... There's weird and there's new weird, which are actually, this is true, these are actually sort of subgenres that exist. So there's like a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of horror, mix it up a little bit.
Well, I don't think they're talking about your writing. I think they're talking about you.
Oh, me? Oh.
So I was wondering, when you were on your book tour here in America recently, did you... did you wear costumes or something? You didn't wear like a robot head or something?
And No.
So did you enjoy your book tour here in America? You've just returned to England, right?
Yes. It was great. It was 2 weeks on the road, East Coast, sort of up and down, started in New York, ended up in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and I think there were 10 cities between them. It was great, you know. Just meeting people, meeting like readers and fans, but also meeting booksellers, you know, the people who are there kind of on the front line selling books.
And I saw that you tweeted. So you enjoy tweeting. It's, you know, authors nowadays have to do all of this tweeting and Facebook stuff. Did you enjoy that?
I do. I mean, I got on Twitter before I was a writer because I thought it would be a great place to kind of hang out with people. And that's just really continued.
Well, it's an important thing to do. It's an important thing to do. Now, one of the things I do know about you is that you like Lego, and I just have to mention it because, if you know, most women, if you open their closet, they might have a lot of clothes, they might have a lot of shoes, And what do I have? I have boxes and boxes and boxes of Lego, tons of Lego. My boys went off to university and left their Lego behind. And now I've got all this tons of Lego, which, of course, is a treasure. I would never get rid of it.
That's right, yeah.
We're waiting for them to get a place where they can take it out and build. So have you ever been to Legoland here in America?
No, I haven't. There is a Legoland in the UK, which I haven't been to either.
Oh, well. You have to come to the one here. It's near Clearwater here, okay, where I am, and then you have to come down to the studio.
Oh,
and it's really fantastic. You would love it here. And, of course, the weather is better here for Legoland.
Yeah, that's true. I agree.
So when it gets cold and dreary, somewhere around January and February, you should get on a plane and fly over here, and we'd be happy to see you here in Clearwater. You can talk more about all of your all of your books. But I want to talk about Elementary.
Sure.
You got a book deal for this, to do a book, a tie-in book. How did you do that? That is like a dream come true.
I know, because I'm a huge fan of the original Sherlock Holmes, and I am a huge fan of Elementary, which is the modern CBS TV show, which has got Sherlock Holmes living in New York City, starring Johnny Lee Miller as Holmes and Lucy Liu as Watson. And it's one of these things that happens, which sounds like it's easy, but
it's not
it's
easy.
It's hard to describe. Yeah. So my UK publisher for Made to Kill and for my other books is called Titan, and Titan also do a lot of these tie-in books, like for film, TV, a whole bunch of them. And it just happened that when I was meeting about, I can't remember which book it was, I discovered they were doing Elementary, and I said, well, I'd like to do that, because that sounds like fun. And also, importantly, I am a fan of Elementary, and I know the show, you know, back to front and inside out and upside down. And kind of, they said, okay, great. And then nothing happened for, months, probably 6 months. And then my agent emailed and said, oh, do you still want to do Elementary? Because they need a writer. And I was like, well, yeah. So I did, because what they needed was exactly what I was there for, you know, someone who knew the show and they could trust not only Titan but CBS, the network, you know, to trust someone that knew Elementary and could actually write a story that fits the show, which is hopefully what I did. So I wrote a book called The Ghost Line, which is a novel. So it's not based on any TV episode. It's an original, you know, Elementary adventure. I kind of consider it to be like one of those, you know, mid-season two-part specials, because obviously it's longer. Being a novel, it's slightly longer than a normal episode. So I wrote that. That came out in April. Some of the best sort of reviews I had from people were saying, well, it's just like an episode of the TV show, which is like the highest compliment.
Exactly, because fans of this show know it so well.
Absolutely.
And to prepare for it, did you go out to Hollywood and watch them film it?
Well, no.
No?
They actually film in New York. They have a studio in Brooklyn, and they actually film on location. If I had more time and I was in New York, I know I was there recently, but it was a very short visit, I could actually go and see them filming. But the thing about them, yeah, they was very helpful. I had scripts, I had sort of notes about the show, sort of the insider stuff. And I basically binged watched all the episodes again. While I outlined it and wrote it. And there's two more books coming. I've just handed in the second one.
Well, this is one wonderful agent you have.
Yeah, no. she does a very good job.
Yes, who is she?
So Stacia Decker at the Donald Mass Literary Agency in New York.
Oh, wow. She is wonderful, because this is an amazing sort of what a fantastic opportunity. And I'm sure that all the fans of Elementary will, you know, just enjoy this so much. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The second one is out next year. It's called Blood and Ink. And then there'll be a third one to finish off.
Well, fantastic. It's not as easy as people think. Although you have the characters there to look at, it is difficult to translate that into a novel.
Oh, yeah.
And to keep it true.
Yeah, people want the characters as they see them on TV, which means you have to get them right. And if you don't get them right, the fans are going to notice very quickly.
So, you've been writing for a long time. Did you start writing when you were very young or what?
Yeah, I was sort of writing at school, probably from the age of about 7. And then I went to university and lost sort of the impetus to write because I was busy with other things. But then it was always there, and I eventually thought, right, I need to sit down, do this properly, make it my kind of thing. And I started writing. You know, Made to Kill is my 8th novel out, I think. It sounds funny, but it's hard to keep track sometimes because... Made to Kill, I finished that book a year and a half ago, and I've written other stuff since, so I kind of had to keep a track of what's actually out. I've kind of always had the writing bug, I think.
Now, one of your projects coming up, or is it done, is The Shield?
Yes, a comic.
A comic? Yeah.
So, yeah, The Shield, I co-write that with Chuck Wendig. Chuck is the author of, most recently, the new Star Wars novel, Aftermath. It's from Dark Circle Comics, which is the superhero imprint of Archie Comics. I'm sure most people know Archie Comics.
Oh, absolutely.
Archie and Jughead and Betty and Veronica. But they have this huge library of superheroes going right back to the 40s, which have kind of come and gone over time, and... this is a sort of a new revival. So The Shield is one of sort of a handful of characters they've brought back. The thing with The Shield is that he was the original Captain America, and in fact he came out before Captain America as a kind of patriotic superhero, dressed in a flag costume and carrying a shield. But then Captain America came along and kind of everyone loved him, so The Shield faded away. But for this, they said to us, you can take The Shield and you can do what you want. Let's be kind of bold and adventurous. So we made The Shield a woman and gave her a whole new backstory. Essentially, she's a new character, but she's still tied into the original. So there are fans of the original who will be able to pick up on bits and pieces of the story. But the first issue came out last month. Issue 2 is on the way. And I love comics and superheroes. I've written a superhero book called 7 Wonders, but The Shield is my first kind of comics work, I love it.
Well, it must be fun to. How do the two of you work together? You write part of it, he writes part of it, and then the illustrator comes along. Who's the illustrator? I forget.
Drew. So Drew Johnson.
Oh yes, Drew Johnson
is the artist. Yeah, colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick, letters by Rachel Deering. We alternate issues actually with the first draft. So one writer will write the script for the issue, and then the other person will edit the script, and then we alternate as we go through, swapping the duties over. The thing is, after you get through sort of 3 or 4 passes of a script, we actually can't remember who wrote what. It changes and evolves so much that it really becomes a product of the both of us. And the other thing that's really good is that we're both very different writers. I mean, Chuck's books, like Aftermath, Zeroes, Blackbirds, they're completely different to the stuff that I write. And then likewise, he couldn't write what I write. So when you put that together, we come up with something which is hopefully completely, completely different. And it works really well. And we're good friends. We've known each other for years. And that's also really good because we can tell each other when something isn't working or we don't like it. And, you know, no one's going to get offended or angry about that.
Well, I love comic books. I know. I mean, that's how I learned to read. As a kid, that was available, and as a treat, we'd look forward every Friday we'd be allowed to buy a comic book, if we were good kids, and my sister and I were always delightful, and of course my little brother, we just didn't tell any on him, so we always got a comic book, and so that was our treat for the week, and that's how we learned to read. It was fantastic. I think they were so cheap when I was young. I don't know how much they're selling for nowadays.
not so cheap.
I mean, you know, they were so cheap, and which was really good because it really opened it up for every. It didn't matter, you know, how rich or how poor you were. Everybody could afford a comic book. So I thought it was wonderful. I don't know if they were as popular in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading comics in the 80s.
In the 80s.
I mean, I'm a child of the 80s. So.
Yeah. So
we could still buy them at newsstands, though. I remember that.
Yes. So you must be very popular in New Zealand. Everyone's very proud of you.
I suppose I wouldn't like to say.
So do you doing a book tour in New Zealand? That's a long.
It's a long way to go. Maybe one day. That'll be good.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you'd be very, very popular there. Yeah, as you were in America doing. It's always interesting. You know, I love to go to like book fairs and book fests and author events, and to see how much the fans really appreciate when a writer gets out there and mingles with them. Of course, nowadays everybody likes to get a selfie, so.
Yes, I've done a lot of those recently.
I'm sure everybody's, you know, putting their picture up with you. So what's your advice to writers? I don't know with you, it's so exceptional because I mean, first of all, you're very prolific in a very really short period of time because your first award, I don't know when was it, back in 2010 or something like that.
2012.
I mean, wow, yeah. You know, and in a very short period of time, you've put out a major amount of work.
My advice is really, I mean, every writer says this, but it's basically you need to sit down and write, and it doesn't matter. Like, you know, people will say you have to write every day, or you have to write this many words a day, or whatever. I think you need to sit down and write. And if you write every day, that's amazing. If you write once a week, that's fantastic. If you do, you know, 3,000 words a day, that's brilliant. If you do 200 words a day, that's great. Because, you know, don't forget, 200 words a day over a year, you have a novel on your hands. It's just, you just need to keep doing it. And I think, you know, as you progress, one of the things I often say is, you know, the default state of a writer is rejection. You know, people are going to say no 10,000 times more than they're going to say yes. And you just keep working. You know, someone says no, you keep going. Something is rejected, you write the next thing. It's basically perseverance. Well, if you can just keep going.
And I think in the case, of course, Made to Kill, I have a feeling that's going to turn into a movie at some point.
Oh, well.
Yeah. it's the type of book that I think will appeal if it's done right as a movie. And, of course, the casting is easier. You don't have to look for Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, exactly. He's a robot. He'll be behind the mask.
That's right. But I think it would be fun. It would be fun. So is this the period of time that you're particularly interested in, or do you have another, are you doing other types of science fiction?
I think this era in particular, I mean, I love 20th century America. My first novel, Empire State, was sort of set in a version of New York that was 1930s, and then obviously Made to Kill is kind of 60s. So somewhere in the 20th century is my kind of comfort zone. I've got a space opera series which is set 1,000 years in the future on a distant space station. That first book is called The Burning Dark, and there's two more after that. I never really decide to write in a particular place or time. It just comes.
It just comes to you.
The story, yeah.
And is there a particular inspiration for you, a particular writer who, other than Raymond Chandler?
One of my favorite writers is Stephen King. People think that Stephen King is a horror writer, but really he's science fiction and fantasy and crime and thriller with kind of scary bits.
all rolled in.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I love about his work is that, you know, and he started right from the beginning of his career, is that he would write what he wanted to write. He was in no particular fixed genre or style. And quickly that became, you know, you can tell a Stephen King book when you open the page and you start reading. The setting and the time and the genre is sort of irrelevant. And I think it's a really good way to approach it. It's different for every writer. You know, some people love, you know, epic fantasy or legal thrillers, and they will write those books, which is great because that's something they love. I read across different genres, different authors, and I take that approach of just writing the story that comes. So, yeah, Stephen King, there's probably half a dozen I could name if I could think. I had to go down and look at my bookshelf today.
So when you're next in America, I hope that you'll come to Clearwater, Florida.
I'd love to.
And visit us, because we would love to have you here. When you're traveling, do you write when you're traveling? Do you take notes along the way? Did you find more inspiration during your trip here?
And I definitely find inspiration. I for my travel, I tend to schedule myself so I don't have to work, because I'll always say to myself, oh, I'm going to do 1,000 words a day in a hotel room and stuff, you never do it, and then you go behind schedule and you feel depressed. So I always schedule it out. I block it out so I don't have to work. But yeah, I'm always taking notes, because you never know when an idea is going to strike, or when you see something or hear something. That's the other thing, advice for writers. It's like, just, you know, you get your inspiration from the world around you, from everything that you see and read and hear and listen to, and, you know. Keep a notebook handy.
When you went to university, were you planning to be a writer then, or did you go into something else first?
Oh no, I went. I did science degrees, and I used to work as another profession entirely. So this is, yeah, writing is unrelated to my training.
Oh, okay. So that's I like
it sometimes
that.
Sometimes happens. Yeah.
Exactly. Happens. Sometimes people, you know, think that they're on a particular career path, and then.
Yeah.
And right. It's good to know that, you know, if that sort of writing bug is in you, if you just get out there and try.
You can always write no matter what you're doing, what job, what field, what profession. If you want to write, you can write. And it doesn't need to be for anybody else. You can write for yourself, write for fun. Sometimes, you know, if you want to turn that into a living, then that's kind of another career path. But you can always write.
Well, had you faced rejection before you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, it's probably, I had a novel rejected, and because it was awful, obviously. But that was kind of the impetus. It's like, oh, right, okay, I need to actually, if I'm going to make a success of this and have a proper kind of go at it, I need to make it my priority. So it was that rejection. I mean, I had others as well, but one in particular I can pinpoint that really gave me the kick I needed.
So all of your books are, of course, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
And yep, that's right. Yeah,
At bookstores?
Paperback, hardbacks, yep.
And what is your webpage?
So you can visit me at adamchristopher.ac.
Okay. And your Twitter is?
Yes. That's Ghost Finder, which is a long story, but that's where you'll find me.
Okay, because I looked at your Twitter and it's very nice. You're very responsive to people, which is nice.
Yeah, I try to be.
I still have a problem. I don't respond very well on Twitter yet. I'm so busy all the time, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? And I have to start responding like at 4 a.m. because that's the only time I have my mind clear. But it is a fun Twitter, actually. I don't find, you know, a lot of Twitters aren't a lot that interesting, but your Twitter is particularly good. It's very open and very, very.
It's a great place to talk to people, really. You know, I work at home in my little office. I don't see anybody all day, so it's my outlet.
So up there in Northern England.
Yes.
And where you're losing your accent,
I know.
Take a trip, I think, home and pick it up again, because there is a wonderful New Zealand accent. So
yeah.
And when I read your book, of course, when I think of Raymond Chandler, I always think of a bottle of bourbon, but it goes just as well with a nice cup of tea. Which I'm
yes.
sure you're having there in England.
I will do.
That was one of the joys of living in England. That I raised my boys in Texas, but I taught them to drink proper tea. We always used to have proper tea in the afternoons because that was a wonderful tradition that I picked up, and so I like to think of you over there having a proper cup of tea. And writing all day long.
Yep, that sums it up.
That sums up your life. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really a joy to listen to you and
thank
to you talk
so much
to
for
you.
Me.
And
I'm
I think you're amazing. I don't know. I'll talk to you in another 2 years, and I don't know how many more books you'll have. You're so prolific. So enjoy, and I will look forward to the comic book. I haven't seen it yet, but as I said, I love comic books, and I think The Shield sounds fascinating. And I encourage all my listeners to check you out and check out your webpage. And repeat it again, your webpage, so people hear
it. Okay, so the website is adamchristopher.ac, like my initials, and Twitter is Ghostfinder.
Okay.
You can spell that.
Yeah, they better. If they can't spell Ghostfinder, they shouldn't be dreaming about writing.
This is possibly true, yeah.
Okay, well, great. It was lovely talking to you. And have a great day. And although you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, we will be thinking of you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks so much. Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was great to talk to Adam. As I said, this book is, you have to just look at the cover. It's, if you go to the Amazon and look up Made to Kill, it's a very clever, very sort of retro cover. And it's what really grabbed me. And so that's the important thing. Sometimes the writers have to think about it to really evaluate your cover, because I might not have read it. As a matter of fact, when I first I read the name, and in my head I sort of said Made, and for a minute I thought it was M-A-I-D, and then I looked at it, Made to Kill, and I looked at this cover and I thought, oh my goodness, this is a great cover. And the story is fun, and he is very insightful, and so it's rather delightful book to read. Now, I want to mention quickly the San Francisco Writers Conference 2016, which is in February 11th through February 14th, Valentine's Day. And they are now accepting applications for the event. It's really going to be a wonderful, wonderful, probably the best writers' convention. And because they draw upon the best speakers, fantastic agents come to this event every year. Of course, one of the top agents, Irene Goodman, will be there. And they have wonderful speakers. Their keynote speaker this year is Ann Barrows. She writes the Ivy and Bean series. And also Jane Friedman, who is, she's the queen of publishing. And her book, Publishing 101, is done through, of course, Writer's Digest. And Jane is the one to go to for information about publishing. So if you are interested in it, go to it's sfwriters.org website and plan to join everybody at that event. It's really quite reasonable. The price is, you know, for San Francisco, it's amazing. For $200, you can have a room at the Mark Hopkins Hotel, which is really quite an amazing price. So I highly recommend you do that. And at the same time, if you are a writer, if you've written something, whether it's been published or not published, they do have several wonderful contests. And I would suggest that you look at the requirements for submission. They have adult fiction, adult nonfiction, poetry, of course, children's books and young adult books. And Andrea Brown, who is probably the best agent for children's books, will be at this event. And one of the workshops that will be there will be, I think, conducted by her. So it's something that if you have a children's book and you want to really move it ahead, the San Francisco Writers Conference in February is the place that you want to be. So thank you again for, I want to thank Adam for joining me, and I want to thank everyone for listening in today. This is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week and, of course, a fantastic Thanksgiving Day. I'm very blessed that both of my boys are home for Thanksgiving, and I'm looking forward to it. And I want to thank Big Ed, who's in the control room and managed to get Adam on today for me. So remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it, and have a great week. Bye.